Okay. Does anybody know why that's not turning on? Seem to be having some technical difficulties with our data projector not turning on. Okay. Okay, that's... And I don't think I can reach it to turn it on. okay, does it... It normally just turns itself on, yeah? No, there appears not to be a remote anywhere here. And the remote controls are just there, which normally just work. You have it on, it turns itself on. But it's refusing to turn on. Okay. Can I send one of you down to IT to get someone to come up and grab someone? Can I get one of you guys to go down to IT and grab someone for the room? Yeah. Or, yeah, down there. Can I? Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Because I don't think anything in this room is long enough for me to stand where you are and reach up and touch the the device. Okay. Well, I think the recordings have probably actually started. And it's probably, if I change to HDMI, which is what supposed to have done, and that should now be recording the lecture. You guys just can't see it. I'll wait until the technician comes to actually fix this. I'm here instead of Runa. Runa's up in Trondheim today. And part of the reason why I can come in and give this lecture is because I teach the multi-threaded course at third year level. And so we look at what happens when you have multiple processes trying to operate at the same time, right? So what do you do when you've got more than one thing accessing your database? And so in today's lecture, we're going to be talking about concurrency control. So how a database manages to stay, you know, consistent and true, even when there are lots of people who are coming in and changing values. It's not much point me talking about what's up there, but I'll kind of start going through. I can almost turn this round. Hello. So should it? I should just press on, shouldn't I? And it's Yeah. Okay, so we now have the technician here. Okay, so thank you. So with concurrency control, this is the last lecture. Now, the wrap-up lecture, and we're going to talk concurrency control today, and Runa has a wrap-up lecture, and he's going to push that back because we talked and decided that actually you guys probably haven't started studying for the database exam yet. Would that be correct? No. So, and so today it will be me talking about concurrency rather than the full wrap-up lecture. So he's just trying to turn this on and off, which will probably change the HDMI setting. But okay, so the outline for today, it'll come up there soon, is we're going to look at transactions. So remember, Runa talked to you about transactions? Vaguely something about transaction. Well, the idea for a transaction is that you have, rather than just single atomic interactions, you might actually have a sequence of things you need to do, right? And so to make sure that that sequence of things is working, I'm glad I'm not the only one. Oh, it's coming up. I couldn't do that myself. You've got a key, I don't. So if I go to HDMI, there we go. That's feeling much better. So, with transactions, we look at doing more than one thing, right? More than a single, update this. I might want to, say, for example, if I'm transferring money, I might want to say, okay, how much credit is there? Do an action, right? Add to the value, and then insert the value, right? So I have to do more than a single operation. It's not just put something in, it's query something, process something, and output something. So we're going to look at transactions and potential concurrency problems, and then go into locking deadlock later. So hopefully you remember these four features. The ACID, yeah, good, excellent. So we talk about a transaction should have atomicity. Right, so it's atomic. It means that over the whole transaction must happen all at once or none of it at all. Right, you can't just do part of a transaction. Right, so for example, if I was going to sell you a car, we can't just do the part of the transaction where you give me money. Right, and then I don't give you the car. Right, that would be a partial transaction. That would be not atomic, because I haven't done the whole thing. And so if we start that transaction, either we do the whole thing, you give me money, I give you my car, or we do none of it, right? You don't give me any money, I don't give you a car, nothing happens. It has to be consistent. So you must transform the database from one consistent state to another. So with reality is quite good at consistency, right? So if I'm selling you a car and I say, here's my car, here's your money. You give me the money and I give you the car. Now, what might be inconsistent is if somehow I gave you the car, but because of a glitch in reality, I was able to keep the car as well. Right? So now there are two cars, the car I gave you and the car I still have. Right? That would be a glitch in reality, which would make reality inconsistent because there are now two of exactly the same entity, but in different places. Right? Reality doesn't do that. Computers, on the other hand, you know, you could copy instances. I remember one of the hacks in a very old game called Diablo. You had a teleporter, right? And one of the hacks was, as you stepped into the teleporter, you'd drop an object, right? Because as soon as you started going to the teleport, it registered all the items you had. You then did a drop action, which inserted that object into the world, and then when your query occurred on the other end of the teleport, you still had all the items you had when you entered the teleport. But you'd also left a copy of that item back there. So you get your bag of gold, you'd step into the teleport, drop the bag of gold, step out, I still have my bag of gold, go back through the teleport, and now have two bags of gold. Right? Because the world was inconsistent. It didn't do an atomic teleportation. It did a kind of, you know, it tried to read something, do an update, and then didn't quite make that consistent. It also should happen in isolation. So if two of us are doing things at the same time, it shouldn't be that there will be partial things that I've done, right? So so for example, if I'm, again, if I'm selling you my car, right, and you give me money, and then someone asks me, like, how much do you own, right? I say, well, I've got all this money, and I've got this car. I'm pretty well off, aren't I? And then I give you the car. Right? So when the creditors came to me and said, do you have enough money to buy a new car? I said, well, I have a car and a whole lot of money. So yes, I've got lots. Yeah? Because they read partial transaction and it was not isolated from something else that was going on. Right? And durability. So once we've made the transaction, it should stay true. Right? So we shouldn't just come back later and go, oh, yeah, no, that never happened. Right? I shouldn't delete it from history. So what that means in the database is that we have a system where when you enter into the database, right, you enter into the transaction, you create a begin transaction statement. And then we're active in the actual transaction, the active transaction. Now, as I end my transaction, so I remain active for a while, cycling on active, and then I go to end the transaction, right? At the moment, nothing I've done, because I'm only working locally, nothing I've done has actually changed the real database, right? So I'm only working on, kind of, you can imagine, a copy of the database. And then I go, I say, okay, I'm finished doing my stuff for the database, take all of these things and commit it to the database. It then starts committing those requests. And then at some point, it either gets all the way through and says, yes, that transaction's accepted, or it discovers something that was incorrect about that whole transaction and then has to abort the whole thing, right? So again, if I was selling you my car, if we start the transaction, right, and when you say, okay, here's the money, and I go, here's the car, and you go and check that I'm the owner of that car, and you find out, well, no, actually, you're not the owner of that car. You want to roll back that whole transaction before it's committed. And so you want me to have the car back, and you want you to have your money back. Right? So we start committing the thing. Do you have that money? Yes, that was partial commit. You have enough money to pay for this. Do I own the car? No. Ah, roll back both of those. Right? So you go to failed, and you abort the whole transaction. So this gives us an issue of concurrency control. Controlling that simultaneous operations do not interfere. So, simultaneously, it would be, I'm selling you my car, and I'm selling you my car. Right? So, simultaneous transactions, where I'm going to sell both of you my car. And so, you give me money, right? And I say, yeah, the car's here. You give me money, oh, yeah, the car's there. And I take both lots of money, and I run away. Right? That would be a concurrency control issue where I've started multiple transactions that are checking, and you each check, does he have a car? Yes, I have a car. So you both check that, you gave me money, and then ran away. So, and then I run away. So controlling the simultaneous operations do not interfere means that, so prevents interference when two or more users are accessing the database simultaneously, and at least one is updating the data. Now, if I wasn't selling you my car, I just said, hey, I've got a cool car, I can show it to you. I could show five or six of you my car. Because it doesn't change anything about who owns what or where the car is or what's happening. I can show all of you my car at the same time, and that's fine. But if I'm selling it to at least one of you, if I say, here, come see my car, and one of you have just bought it, and now it's not my car, it's your car, right? So that would be, even if I've got a whole bunch of people coming to see my car, if I've sold it, it's no longer my car, right? So even if only one of them is updating, you kind of have to stop all the rest. And the interleaving, as I said, if we interleave transactions, right? So if I'm selling you my car, and you both of you, I'm trying to sell you my car, and I sell you, and I go, right, okay, I've got a car, right? And you take the car, and then you check, to see, do you have a car? And go, no. And I check, do you have money? And you go, no. I get my car back, but I don't get to sell it to you because you already checked if I had a car. And I said, well, no, I've started the transaction selling it to him. So I would have to roll back you and that I'd get potentially failed updates. So there are various types of this. So there's a lost update problem, the uncommitted dependency problem, and inconsistent analysis problem. Okay, so we're going to look at each of these. So the lost update problem. So successfully cleansed an update is overwritten by another user. Okay, so this is the overwritten update. And you see this in financial markets. So it's got, if we have one transaction which is going to withdraw $10 from my account, right? So you can imagine the code here goes, okay, so I've got a balance of 100. So we can probably write this on the board. So I have, now it doesn't have the marks to where the screen can see me, but I'm assuming about here. So I start with 100. And so you're programmers. So the first thing you do is you check balance, right? So you do things like, you know, and I want to subtract 10. So if bal x greater than, withdraw, right? So withdrawal. So if I say, you know, if the balance is greater than that, so, you know, I'm going to check first to see if I'm allowed to take out £10, right? Because I don't want to go into negative. And so you'd go new bal x equals bal x minus withdrawal. Okay, yeah, so you do that. And then you'd go, the SQL update, and where bal x equals new bal x, right? Actually, this will be a colon, and these will be values, and, you know, syntax, right? But you get the idea, right? So I've checked that I could do it. I've then done the new calculation, what the new balance is, and then I've done the SQL update to say that's the new balance. Okay. Now, the problem is that we've described here is there's someone else at the same time is taking a new balance of taking bal x plus 100. Alright, so he's going to add £100 to my account. That's lovely. Now, if you do this properly, I could add 100 and then subtract 10, and I'd have 190. Or I could subtract 10 and then add 100, and I'd have 190. Right? That would all be great. If, however, I do this in the wrong order, so I do this call independently of this call, and then SQL bal x equals new bal, if I call this operation 1, 2, 3, and 4, I have 4 operations, so I can do them, and so long as 1 occurs before 2 and 3 occurs before 4, they're still running in serial, so my program's operating normally. So I go, so I could have sequence 1, 2, 3, 4. Yay, that would work. All right, 1, 2, 3, 4 work. 1, 3, 2, 4. What happens if I do 1, 3, 2, 4? So if I do 1, my new balance is now 200. I then do 3. Now, I haven't changed the balance yet here, so this balance is still the old balance, so this is now 90. I do 2, so I set my balance to 200. And I do 4, so I set my balance to 90. So this sequence results in 90. All right, this was correct at 190. That sequence, oh, bugger, I've lost that £100. It's disappeared. So 1, 3, 4, 2. All right, so the other one intersperses between I get in there. So then it would go 200, 90, set to 90, then set to 200. So I'd be 200. Yay! Bank lost my lost the money I transferred. That's great. And if you do, you can also have the other ones, which are 3, 1, 2, 4, right? Which would be, again, I set my balance to 90, I've added the 200, then I write it to 90, so that would be 90 still, and I could do 3, 1, 4, 2, which will result in a 200, right? So, of these sequences, most of them are wrong, right? Most of the interleaving is wrong. So you really actually do try and have to guarantee that it's going to go either 1, 2, 3, 4, or 3, 4, 1, 2, right? Because it's at this point, when I first run that, I get the balance out, right? And so it's when I'm running those, and I haven't done the updates yet, right? So I can do 3, 4, 1, 2, or 1, 2, 3, 4, but I can't do any of these interspersed calls. Okay. So, uncommitted dependency problem. So, it occurs when the transaction can see the intermediate values. Okay. So, here, I've done all of this. Now, if I was doing more things, so I was transferring money between multiple accounts, I might have an SQL update here, and then another SQL update where I set, you know, bell y to being new bell y. All right, so I was transferring money between two accounts, an x account and a y account. Now, in here, you can see, so if we have a T4 updates balance x to 200, but it then aborts, so balance x should be back to the original £100, right? So it's saying, in this one, I did this update, and then I did a check for consistency. I found there was a problem, and so I want to roll back this whole thing and say, no, I never gave you that £100. Roll everything back. Get rid of everything. So when this guy then did a read of this balance at this point, so it was, so in here, if I do this read, but then this block, this transaction, tries to roll back, right, then you have significant problems. Now, there was a challenge in Ethereum recently, the Bitcoin digital currencies. So they're a public ledger of transactions. And one of the challenges, they found a bug. And they found that someone was exploiting this bug and transferring money and making money that didn't exist. And they were trying to decide whether they should roll back the whole system back to an earlier state. But that would then invalidate every transaction that had happened from the Saturday when it occurred through to the next Friday when they were discussing it. And the question, you know, if people have transferred money, right, if it's just transferring money between accounts, you can roll all that back, everybody's money is back in the same place. But if people have been buying things from each other, like you buying my car, if I had sold you my car, and then suddenly the banks go, oh, sorry, we've got a bug, we're rolling back all accounts to how they were last Saturday. Right? Which means he has my car and all my money. So that would be a problem if there have been real-world transactions that you've tried to roll back. So while you're dealing with stuff that's just in the database, this is okay. As soon as you're dealing with transactions which might have some influence on the real world, something that's already kind of committed in reality, then, you know, you're going to struggle to have a successful rollback without people getting very, very angry at you. But as you hear, so as you can see, if we did actually do this rollback, then 1 and 2 had done their thing to get me a correct value of 190. Because I had rolled back, the new balance will be giving 190 when I'd rolled back this £100 commit, and so it should only be reading 90, right? Because I said, oh no, that was an error. inconsistent analysis problem. Okay, so it occurs when the transaction reads several values, but second transaction updates some of them while the first transaction is running. So one of the things you see in games is you sometimes see this if you are updating your world and you're displaying your game at the same time, right? And you update bits of the world, and the game tries to display bits of those while they're updating, right? And so you get in games you can get screen tier where you get half a screen and then it's updated the content and you get this shared second half of the screen. When you're doing database transactions, if I was shifting money around, and while I was shifting money around, I had another transaction which wasn't trying to update anything, it was just trying to read, in this case, how much money do I currently have? What's my total balance? Now, if it reads, so this is an issue with not having someone trying to write something, but just someone trying to read something. If it's trying to evaluate what is my balance, in here, if I'm updating multiple balance sheets, so I've got X, Y, and Z, if I'm transferring money between two of them, so let's say, what are the numbers he's got there? We've got 100, 50, and 25. So I'll go back into here. Otherwise, I'll be off the screen for the streamers who are watching either currently or in the future. So if I have 100, 50, and 25, when I go to transfer that 10, then what happens is I might say transferring the 10 from the 100 to the 50, right? Now there's various ways of doing this, right? I say, right, I'm going to check, have I got 100 here? Yes. Right? So there's an if, check, have I got enough money? There's a new balance, and then they decrease old balance. Right, so there's when I look at the two, I've got the let's call it new, and we'll call this, what does he call them? Yep, X, Y, Z. So I'm going to have a new X, which is going to be 90, a new Z, which is going to transfers from Z. From X to Z, right. So from X to Z, so Z's supposed to be 35. Now, if I read my balances as they are, if I insert set Z equals new Z, then that will suddenly be 35. I'm then reading balance here, and balance here. Now, if I do that before anything happens, that's great. If I read this balance, and then this whole thing does its job, so this is now 90, and this is 50, and this is 35. I've already read this one, I then read this one, but now, because this has been updated, I read this one, and then I come up with the 185 instead of 175. Right, because something was reading while I was in the middle of doing this updating. Okay, so that's the inconsistent analysis problem. Now, although I haven't written anything to the database, so the database itself is still consistent, right? So this is a consistent state of the database. I now have some information that I tried to extract from the database, which was current balance. And I'm getting 185. So I've stored in my program that you have 185. But at no stage did the database think that that was true, right? It's just that I read this out of sequence. And so although the database is consistent, right? It's done this whole transaction as a single thing. Well, it's done this transaction without creating errors. Another process got in and was able to read values halfway through the transaction. Okay. Now, in concurrency, we call this sort of problem a race condition. And we call it a race condition because you've got two processes that are racing to conclusion. And in fact, it depends on the order and execution that determines the result. And so race conditions are usually not a problem. Well, if you've got two things that are, one's very, very slow and one's very, very fast, you can expect the fast one to finish first, right? So in a lot of cases, you can write code that's pretty bad and it still works almost all the time, right? The problem is because, you know, when as a computer program, you're unlikely for the operating system to actually decide to swap you out between this execution and the set value here, right? It's just the operating system usually leaves your program in memory for a while and lets it does a whole bunch of stuff before it swaps it out, right? So, you know, it's usually not a problem. But if you're transferring money and, you know, 1% of the time it suddenly duplicates money or the money just disappears, that would really piss you off about your bank, wouldn't it? Right? If you transferred money between accounts and then suddenly, you know, the money just sometimes disappeared or sometimes it doubled. I mean, the doubling might make you happy, but the disappearing makes you really angry. So even if it only happens once in a thousand, once in a million times, it's still a significant problem. So what we talk about here is, if we want to have things serializability is the objective of this control, right? The way we set up transactions is to make sure that this, no matter how many tasks and things we throw at, it behaves as if it had happened in serial. Right? So luckily, both of these are valid, right? So it's not that I have to guarantee that it happens in this order. It could happen in this order, but I have to guarantee that it results in the same 190. Right? So I have to guarantee the consistency. If you forced everything to run completely in serial, then you slow down your database massively, right? Say, no, we're going to lock everything. While I'm looking at the database, that's the only thing allowed to change. If you've ever worked on Word documents, right, as a group, where you're trying to update a report, right, you'll often get the person saying, no, I'll take the document and I'll write in it now, right? Because if we both write at the same time, you'll make some updates, I'll make some updates, we'll try and merge the two documents, I'll have corrected something, that spelling error will come back into it because you hadn't corrected in your version and you copied your version over my version and aha. Has that ever happened to you? Yes, good. You've had lost updates created by concurrent editing of a document, right? Ah. Yep. Oh, that's annoying. Because the way that Word locks files, right? And I it's really annoying when for some of the Microsoft products, they'll lock it and they won't clean up properly when they exit. Yeah, and so what they've done is they've done this transaction locking. They say, no, I'm the one editing this file, right? So I don't want to lose the update, so I'm going to lock it. So you can read it, but you can't write to it, right? So I've got that lock. And then it suddenly crashes, but it leaves the file locked. So no one else can touch it either. And it's kind of, yeah, you've got to go through. Sometimes you have to restart your machine to get all the locks cleared out, right? That's very annoying. But it's basically trying to do the same kind of transaction analysis, right? It's trying to say, I'm editing this file. We don't want two people to edit the same file at the same time. So it creates like those extra versions and numbers and editing copy 4 and editing copy 5 and to try and say, okay, I don't know how to interleave your updates. I don't know whether you wanted 190, 90 or 200. So what I'll do is I'll just copy 3 versions of it and you guys can work out how to merge those and make them consistent. So this is the locking and deadlock problem. So you actually had what's a deadlock problem, right? Where you had somebody had locked it and wasn't releasing it, and so no one could do anything. So locking transactions. So this is one of those important things to do in this situation, is say, okay, I'm going to stop you accessing the database while I do some updates to it. Right? Now, there are multiple types of lock, but the simplest is to say, no, it's locked now. You can't come in here until I've finished rearranging things. And then when I leave, I will unlock it, right? And it's the way you generally try and create consistency, right? So rather than merging and updating later, the standard way is to say, well, if most of the time we're reading from a database rather than writing to it, the few times we need to write to it, we'll get a lock then, we'll stop everybody else, I'll do my stuff, and then I'll let you guys back in, right? So you can imagine cleaning staff, right, might lock the toilets so that they have to clean the toilets, and they don't really want you coming and using the toilet while they're scrubbing the floor, right? So they lock the toilet for editing the toilet interface. And, you know, when you go to the toilet, you also lock the door so that other people don't come in and use the toilet at the same time as you, right? Now, interestingly, in a male toilet, we have almost a kind of read lock version for urinals, right? Where you can actually kind of use the urinal things in parallel. That's okay, right? But there are the stalls where you need to have solo access to a facility, right? So, and in fact, I don't know if any of you are old enough to actually have gone to like the old sports stadiums that just had, you know, the metal sheet along the wall as a urinal. They didn't actually have individual cubicles. That's very much a parallel access and multi-threaded approach to going to the toilet. So generally, transactions must claim a shared read lock or exclusive write lock in the data before they read or write. Now, the reason this happens is if you're going to if you're going to read data, that's great. And so we go in there, we read a whole bunch of the database data, and then we come out with our summation of current balances and all those sort of things. If I say, right, I'm going in to read all the data, right? And someone else says, I'm coming in to read all the data, and a third person says, I'm coming in to read all the data, that's all good, we can all do that concurrently because we're not changing anything. Someone then comes in and says, oh, I want to change some balances. And the rest of us say, wait a minute, we're still reading. You can change those once we're done. Right? And so the write lock comes in, and he asks for the lock, and we go, whoa, we're going to finish reading. Once we're finished reading, then he gets the write lock to actually change those balances. Now, if another process comes in, and she says, oh, I want to read, the write lock is, whoa, no, I'm waiting to write, you can wait. And so the read lock, even though there are people reading it, the read lock has to wait in the queue for the write lock to have gone through. So the lock prevents another transaction modifying the item or even reading it in the case of a write lock, right? So the write lock comes in and says, oh, no, I'm going to change it, so all of you guys have to wait behind me until I've finished cleaning the toilet, updating the database. So there are basic rules to locks. There are read locks and write locks. Two reads, that's all great, right? Two reads, many reads, you can read together, that's all fine. If anybody's trying to write, it all blocks. So if a transaction has a shared lock on an item, you can read but you can't do any updates. If the transaction has exclusive lock on an item, you can both read and update the item, right? So if I go in and they say, right, this is mine, I'm updating, then I can do everything. Reads don't conflict, so they can share. Exclusive locks give transaction exclusive access, right? So what happens is here, if I say, right, lock the database, and then I do all of my reading and writing, and then I unlock, when this guy came in to change it, he'd go, oh, can I grab the lock? And the system will say, no, you have to wait. Deadlock, which you described, was it's an impasse when two or more transactions are waiting on the same lock, right? So the Microsoft had locked the file saying, no, it's read-only now, you can't edit this because someone's editing it currently, and that person program has crashed or they've gone away and they're not releasing their lock. So you should hopefully have deadlocks transparent to the user, right? The idea is you as a user shouldn't have to hunt down the person who's editing the database and like beat them up until they unlock the database, right? That's That's the inappropriate thing for a database to do. So you generally have three ways of getting out of the deadlock. So you have timeouts, right? So what it would say is, okay, you've locked the file. You haven't touched it for 10 minutes, or you haven't touched it for 20 minutes. I think you're probably done editing, right? So what I'll do is, and you have to decide what you do about the current state of the thing, because I've been doing some editing. Should I autosave it? Because if you've got autosave on, right, on your Word, you've got autosave on, so I've been autosaving it. If you haven't touched it for 10 minutes, maybe what it goes, okay, I'm just going to get rid of that lock for you and let other people start editing that file, because, you know, obviously it's been a long time, you've not changed anything. Right? Deadlock prevention is saying, well, okay, can I create it so that when you go and access it, you actually always get a copy, right? So let's say you have your Word document saved on a central repository. When I go to edit it, I just copy from that, and I edit just locally. Right, so I have no deadlocks, nobody ever locks me. It's only now when we've got two versions, both in that version, how I merge the two. Right, so this is no longer a deadlock problem that I couldn't do updates. It's now merging two different sets of updates that become the challenge. But that would prevent deadlock. And the other is deadlock detection and recovery. Right, so when in your situation, you manually did the deadlock detection and recovery, where you had to find out who it was, get them to commit their changes or exit the program, and then get everybody to merge their updates and get everything back and copy the temporary file back into the right name and all those sort of things, right? So for a database, we're supposed to try and do this all ourselves, like have the database do it for us, so we don't see these problems happening. So when you lock, at what granularity do you lock the system? So size of the data chosen is important for how much throughput you can get. Right? So, for example, when the cleaners go into the toilets, one way they could do is they could just lock the door to the front of the whole toilets and then take, you know, 20 minutes to clean the whole toilets and just block off everything. Right? Or they could just put a sign in front of each stall they're cleaning and just clean that bit. Right? So here I either dock I lock the entire room, or I lock the individual cubicles. Right? So the coarser, right? So if you just lock whole rooms, then you know there's less problems with concurrency. But as you get finer and finer locks on your database, so if I could lock the entire database, no one can touch it. I might just lock. If here I was just doing stuff with X, how about I just lock the X table, right? And say, well, okay, I'll just lock the balance on this table. You can change Y tables, Z tables, I don't care, I'm only locking X. And here, if you're going to transfer money between X, Y, and Z, you might lock all three of them, right? Say, well, I'm going to read all three of these, don't change any of them while I'm reading these. Right? So you could block the whole room, or you could block just individual tables. And unfortunately, knowing how to do that depends on the particular database you have and the particular sequence of kinds of transactions you have. Just like when you're trying to work out how you index a database, you index it according to how often you're having to search it in a particular way. With transactions, you lock according to the kinds of interactions you have. So, database. So you could lock at level zero. You say, right, no, I'm the only one touching this entire database. The rest of you guys just wait. Or I could say, okay, no, I know that there are five or six files in this database. I'm only going to lock this one because I only care about things within here. So I'm going to lock the file. The rest of the files might change. I could go down and say, well, actually, there is even level three, which is the page. Right? So this is at the kind of a file would be a sheet of data. If I could say, well, I know I'm going to edit this area of that whole file, so I'll just lock that page of data. If I say, well, okay, I know I'm only actually editing this row, right? And that would be the record, an individual record is a row. So I say, okay, I'm going to just lock this row. Don't change this row while I'm working on this individual row. Or I might say, okay, I'm only going to change balance. Right, I'm not going to change the name, I'm not going to change the street address, I'm not going to change it. So just lock the balance and say, no, I'll lock this individual field, so you can change anything else you like, you can change anything else up above me, but don't change this one. I'm going to change it, or I'm going to read it. So different databases offer you different level of locking, right? So lock the whole database down to locking an individual field. So at MySQL, you have table-level locking in the MyISAM and in memory, and in the Inno database, you can actually do row-level locking. So this is actually, when you guys set up a database in SQL, you have to choose your database type. And you've got, like, the MyISAM and InnoDB, and you go, I have no idea. You know, randomly choose one. Oh, yeah, I'll choose that one. Yay, it's the default. It's at this point where you start actually working out, so they do some things differently. If I need row-level locking, and I'm trying to get the high concurrency because I'm going to lock individual rows, then I want the Inno database because that's going to give me that row-level locking, right? Rather than the MyISAM, because that's going to only lock whole tables, so I'm going to have to slow down concurrent access. Okay. So, again, we look at... Yep, question. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you lock on a row, the question is, does it lock the entire table? So if I do a read lock on a row and a read lock on the table, they're both reads, they're fine. If I do a read lock on a row and then someone does a write lock on the whole table, then the write lock will have to wait until the read finishes. Yes, so it kind of propagates back up, right? If I do a write lock on the row and then come and try and do a read lock on the table, the table go, well, that contains this row which have a lock in it, so no, you're going to have to wait until that write lock is released before you can then read the whole table. Right? So in that in this diagram here, you could see that basically a field lock 2, so if I lock field 2 for writing, then anyone who's trying to do record 1 will be locked. Anyone who's trying to do page 2, so it just basically the lock will propagate all the way back up. If you're at the same level. So if I get a lock on field 2 for write lock and you get a lock on field 1 for write lock, we're both sweet, we can interact there, right? So in the Inno database, when I lock a single row, right, you lock a row, I lock a different row, we both get to do our updates on those row and we can both get done, right? In the table level, I lock the table, then you just have to wait for me to be finished, right? So you can see how that would, if you're going to have, say, you know, if you're a game and you had 100 players editing a table, but each game instance was only editing their instance in the row, right? So, you know, I'm only affecting my current gold and how I'm transferring gold back and forth, then I could have 100 people all only accessing their individual row and locking their individual row, and that would be fine. If I'm using the MyISAM one, then every time someone tries to edit anything about that, they're all going to lock and all going to have to wait to do it in serial. Even though I would never be changing your name, right? Because that wouldn't make any sense. I can change my name, I can update information about me. And so, yeah, that would be slow down your processing significantly. Okay, so we eventually run into writing this as code. So, in MySQL, what does the transaction system look like? Well, you begin transaction, you remain active doing stuff in your transaction, you then try and commit the transaction, check that it worked, and then finally commit it or abort it. So, in MySQL, the standard thing to say is, no, we don't actually, we have auto-commit, which means as soon as you send any SQL instruction to the database, any update instruction to the database, it auto-commits it, right? So every single statement is committed. There is no robot back, there is no transactions. So what you have to do is you actually have to turn off auto-commit in your SQL database to allow you to then start transactions. So what we do is then we have to have a begin transaction on successful completion commit and abort on failure. So if we look at some actual PHP code, So having turned off auto-commit, you then do your database handler, begin transaction. You then execute some code. And again, here we create kind of just a number so I can see that I've done something. And then I execute this lot of code. Now, this update is fine, let's commit, and then I do a commit. So I do a begin transaction, and then I do a commit here. Now, I could, in theory, put in a check in here that would be a execute select test from music genre, and then check that equals that in the database I actually have the salt that I created, right? So if I create that value, I could insert it and then check again, is like going to a read from the database saying, have you actually successfully inserted that? And if the numbers that came back were correct, I go, great, you did insert that. I will now commit that update, right? So I could write in a PHP check in here to see that you had actually successfully changed the value. Now, given that we've begun a transaction, and this is a transaction which will have a write lock, then no one else should be allowed to do anything to the database but me, right? So I've locked the whole database. But if you wanted to have a check in here to see that it had worked, you'd put it in there and then roll it back if it hadn't, right? And, you know, there are other reasons, like, you know, you lost connectivity to the database, right? And it lost... So this call got lost in the network packet somewhere, right? And just, you know, there was a failure, something failed. When I go to check, it hasn't updated properly. So then I'd have to roll back, right? How often that happens? Well, with TCP/IP, it generally never happens. It's very rare for it to happen because TCP actually checks that you've sent everything correctly. And so the network layer handles most of that. It's usually only when you have a crash while processing that you might be halfway through this program when your program crashes, right? And then it's what do I do about that, right? Now, there are various solutions to this. Some have partial saves, and they every time you do a thing, you save it to a local file, and then on startup, it goes, I've noticed you're halfway through a transaction. Do you want to continue with that previous transaction? Right? So it loads it up from memory. The other thing you can do is you begin transaction, you do the updates. Here is you realize there was something went bad with the update, right? So if I checked to set the value, I would then do a rollback saying, no, I didn't actually want that. So roll back all of these changes back up to where I said begin transaction. Right? So that's how you manually do this in PHP. If you are having concurrent accesses, if you have multiple web pages that are accessing the same piece of information, like, so let's say I have, you know, a bunch of users who are accessing their bank accounts, then I don't want to have only one person accessing a bank account at the same time, so I want to allow them to kind of read, interact, and do things to their accounts. Most of the time, that's going to be fine, except if they're partially through something and suddenly they drop. Right? So let's say you're filling in a form. When you leave, you don't want it to have done part of that and committed part of that information and not the rest. So you want the database to remain consistent and do this rollback behavior. Okay, so that was the transaction stuff. Questions around transactions. Have I been making sense? You understand kind of, you know? I probably shouldn't have used the toilet analogy, but hopefully you'll remember that more now. Sometimes talking about things that you don't expect helps you remember things. What we can do now is that this is why we're only an hour and a bit in here rather than doing the full 2 hours, because your 2 hours was allocated to this discussion plus the overview and prep for the exam session. Now, we can show you some of this code. There's this code is in Fronter, so you can actually play with it in the tutorial. And we can have a break, and you can come back and ask me some questions about this stuff if you like. Or you can just all head away. What do you want to come back and ask questions, or are you likely just to head away? Who has questions? Because I can talk about all sorts of this stuff, right? Because a couple of phrases, and I'll use these two phrases because most of our PhDs haven't heard of them. And it's a database term, which you'll hear in the future. And just to say that, you know, there are interesting terms out there. There's something called unipotent. This is not in the exam. Unipotent are things that you can do many times, but only affect the database once, right? So if I took, for example, an update, the record with, like, my, if I was updating my name from Simon to Peter, right, and I said into the NAV database, take this FODSIL number and update the name to Peter, right? The first time I do that, it's going to change the database. The second time I do that, it's going to keep it the same, right? So once it's done it once, that's permanently done. And so with this transaction analysis, there are some things which, if you're doing a write, but your write is unipotent, when it fails, you just write it again, right? You just say, oh, no, you can change things, but I'm changing that name to Peter. And it says, oh, it failed. I said, I don't care. Just change it to Peter. Oh, it failed. Change it to Peter. I just keep sending that update, and eventually it will work. Right? And once it's worked, doesn't matter how many times I send it again, it will still have been the same. Right? So there are some things which, if you're really trying to optimize these transaction analysis, you can start looking at unipotent, which is actually theoretically this bit of math, which the f of x equals the f of x, right? So there is underlying all of this ACID transactions, all of these like features of database, there is a bit of math that you can go to if you're interested in sort of actually digging in and working out how do I prove that these things work, right? So there are a lot of kind of interesting fun stuff you can go into and proving and improving the concurrency of your database. If you've got a million customers and you're being paid kind of to try and get as many transactions through as fast as possible, then going down into kind of understanding the math and the relational algebra and working out how to optimize every call so they run concurrently, like how to do individual row locks or individual field locks and changing your database so it allows those, is what will eventually make your company better than everyone else's company. Right? So deep down, eventually, you might have to care about this stuff once you're actually trying to make a lot of money from a lot of people. Right? While you've got a single database, while your students here, you're never going to really worry about concurrency because I don't think all of you are accessing the same database at the same time. But eventually, hopefully, you'll all get jobs. And those jobs will want to pay you money. And if you are better at this sort of stuff than the next guy, you probably get more money, right? And if you can work out how to optimize your database, then as a developer, you might become the most valuable person in the company because you can do it, this sort of stuff better. Okay, so we'll take the break. We have a lab at 10, I believe. Yes, so we'll come back and discuss the code on Fronter at 10. Unless any of you have any questions between now and 10 o'clock. Any questions? Nope. Okay. See you at 10. Now, I need to go into this and stop the recording. Hello, internet people. Yes, we're stopping now. For listening... Yes. Right. Are they not currently there? Okay. So I think I can now... Now, I think if I go stop at this point... Dun, dun, dun. It should stop. Okay. I press stop. Let's see if that actually worked.